And so it was that the son of a Presbyterian Church of Scotland minister would one evening kneel in St. Giles Cathedral in Edinburgh and be called to preach the gospel. I don't remember much about the service, except that the Presbytery of Edinburgh presented me with a Bible. I was going to mention that I already had one, but then I realized it was free. And in Scotland, if something is free, you never turn it down. So began my career. More than a century earlier, Sir Walter Scott was also growing up in Edinburgh and thinking about his career. And his overriding ambition was to be a poet. He worked hard at his craft, but the stage was already too crowded. There was Byron. The Assyrian came down like a wolf on the fold, and his cohorts were gleaming in purple and gold, and the sheen of their spears was like stars on the sea. And the blue wave rolls nightly on deep galley. And if that wasn't enough, there was also Tennyson on the stage. Forward to the Light Brigade. Was there a man dismayed? Not though the soldier knew someone had blundered. There's not to make reply, there's not to reason why, there's but to do and die. Into the valley of death rode the 600. And the young Walter Scott couldn't possibly compete with those masters of the craft. Broken in spirit, he turned and decided that all he could do would be to write prose rather than verse. But in the end, classics like Rob Roy and Ivanhoe set him among the great literary giants of his time, but prose was always his second choice. Or turn to the New Testament. Paul was a difficult man, and no one could really work with him. And yet, oddly, he devoted his whole life to being the spokesman for a man called Jesus, whom he had never met, whose family he ignored, and whose disciples he didn't much like. Jesus. Jesus, who grew up in Galilee, which was up in the north. It was bandit country. It was too dangerous for Roman soldiers even to be there. Jesus in Galilee, carrying out his ministry largely in the little fishing villages up around the Lake of Galilee. Despite what they sometimes thought, he wasn't a national figure. writing in our heads about how life will be from the infant days of "I'm the king of the castle" through the wistful days of "someday my prince will come," we all sketch those autobiographies. They were stories full of optimism and splendid deeds and mighty pilgrimage and the crown that fadeth not away. It was all going to be so great. But the reality was somewhat different. Here's a young student at law school, and he dreams that maybe one day he will get a seat on the Supreme Court. But good jobs are hard to come by, and he ends up in a nondescript office. Not even very enjoyable work. It's his life's second choice. Or here is a young woman, and she dreams of a career on Broadway. But she never gets beyond the bit pieces in the local theater, and much of the time she's waiting on tables to keep body and soul together. Life's second choice. Or here's a quiet soul. And she longs for someone strong and true who will scatter the primal loneliness of the human heart. But Mr. Wright never comes along, or if he does, he turns out to be Mr. Wrong, life's second choice. Sooner or later, we all discover that life has to be lived out painfully on the basis of second choices. There are circumstances we would never have chosen, there is a temperament we would never have requested, and there are ground rules that we're simply not quite up to. But here's the astonishing thing. The Bible says that it was the Spirit who would not allow Paul to enter Bithynia. What if it is God who does not allow us to build our lives on ideal sites with faultless material and carefree spirits? What if the shadows are God's gift to us, as well as the morning light? I find this theme of second choices lavishly illustrated in the Bible. Here's a young man called Jacob. He plans to get to the top of the tree, as most young men do. As the younger son, he has the right to stay at home and enjoy all the benefits of the family homestead. But that wasn't the way life worked out for him. And some of it was certainly his own fault. But during the most formative years of his life, when he was making decisions about his marriage and about his faith, he was far away from home. Far away from those who might have given him guidance and help. He was working as a cowhand for Laban, his scheming uncle. Well, here's another young man called Joseph. He dreamed that the sun and the moon and the whole universe would fall down before him, and it would all happen without too much effort on his part. We met teenagers like that. So he flounced around in that ridiculous coat of many colors, a kind of fancy academic gown, on a cattle farm. Can you believe it? So in the end, he got jumped, and he went hobbling off to Egypt at the north end of a camel that was going south. And there was worse to come. He ended up, as you will remember, with Mrs. Potiphar, who was a firm believer in love your neighbor, but don't get caught. In other words, much of the first part of Joseph's life was a choice, but it was very much a second choice to what he would have liked to happen. by the temple police when he had been teaching openly in the temple, as other people could do too. How could he be lumped in with two freedom fighters? Oh yes, the Romans called them terrorists, or they called them thieves, but the people called them freedom fighters. How could he be lumped in with them when he had nothing whatever to do with the resistance movement? And above all, how could he be so forsaken when he trusted so totally that the God to whom he had given his allegiance would also be there for him in his hour of trial? My God, why have you forsaken me? His life and his death were second choices. Life's second choices. Sometimes they are the result of our own personality, a physical ailment, a restrictive childhood, an innate insecurity, a fear that we don't quite measure up. Something within ourselves that screws things up time and time and time again. And our friends often know that. And then there are choices that others have made which have boxed us in. Or there are sheer accidents of time and place which no one in particular seemed to make. If only the Spirit had given us Bithynia and not Troas. But here's the remarkable thing, that it was in the place of second choice that Paul rendered his most remarkable service. Troas turned out to be the gateway to Asia, the place where he made his first convert in a new continent, the start of some of the finest Christian communities in places like Philippi and Thessalonica. And Paul did it with the bits and the pieces, the leftovers of his broken plans. Let me finish with this thought. A lot of popular evangelical religion today seems to take us away from the reality of living in a tough world. Jesus becomes the escape from pain and loss, from limitations and from all question marks. A Jesus religion which replaces goodness with happiness, struggle with certainty, travail with feeling good. It's the Jesus religion, but it's not the religion of Jesus. For God cares too much about fashioning our lives to give us sedatives in the place of discipleship. It is the Spirit who leads us to Troas. So accept your Troas, whatever it is. Regrets from the past, uncertainties about the future, some debilitating thing in your mental or physical makeup, choices which closed some doors which you now wish had been left open, people who make life miserable and bosses who make work unhappy, things you just can't change. Accept the fact that you are perhaps a naturally anxious person, often insecure, frequently wondering and frightened about the future. For this is the raw material out of which God builds his heaven. I started off with Walter Scott. Let me finish with C.S. Lewis, who was a pupil at the school I attended. C.S. Lewis was born with only one joint in his thumb, so he was manually very clumsy. He wrote, "I longed to make things, ships, houses, driven to write children's stories instead. But you can do more with a castle in a child's story than with the best cardboard castle you ever made that now stands on a nursery table. Yes, you can. You can. Don't you see?